Now, here's a man I think we certainly have something in common. When he was a kid, his parents told him not to do that, but he did it anyway. Todd Wilber, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Good to talk to you, sir. Now, you have the most extraordinary career, and I try and explain for our listeners what it is you're famous for. Your books are all about top secret recipes. They're a big series of cookbooks in the States, and you basically reverse engineer really famous recipes from restaurants and very big restaurants, branded restaurants.
Yes, the biggest chains in America. I hack their food and give you the recipe. They love me.
Oh, I bet they do. That, you know, it's a wonderful idea. And there's many times I've gone into certain kind of restaurants and thought, oh, how do they make that peanut sauce? Or, you know, and it's a very hard thing to find, isn't it?
It is. There, you know, a lot of these chains are very protective of their recipes. Sure. We're talking about sometimes billion-dollar companies, and the recipes are important to them. But a lot of times these original recipes at one point were just made in a kitchen, just like you and I have. And so they're all very hackable.
Fantastic. Now, where did this obsession begin? How far back do we go here then, Todd?
Let's go back 30 years.
Wow.
There was, yes, before the internet, before email, there was in the States here a recipe floating around. It was called a chain letter. It was a chain letter recipe that claimed to be the secret recipe for Mrs. Fields cookies, chocolate chip cookies. Do you know what those are? Do you have those?
No, I don't think we're familiar with those over here.
Yeah, it's a super popular sort of mall outlet store that sells these amazing gooey chocolate chip cookies, and everyone was loving them at the time, and this recipe went out there, and it was a completely bogus recipe, but it actually caused quite a stir. The company had to put signs in their stores disclaiming this recipe, because when you made it, it made a horrible cookie, and they didn't want people to think their cookies were terrible. So they had to disclaim this recipe. But
wow.
I saw what was happening. I saw that people were into this, that they were passing this recipe around. It spread all across the country. And so I thought, wow, this is cool. What if we had a book of these kind of famous recipes? Mm-hmm. So I tackled that one first. I had a great hack of the Mrs. Fields chocolate chip cookie and started going crazy. Next up was a Big Mac from McDonald's.
Okay, so tell me the process that you hack a recipe then, because you sound like it's easy, but it can't be.
No, it's definitely not easy. It takes a lot of patience. It's a lot of trial and error. But you know, my method has improved over the years. I've learned that the more work you do before you start cooking, the less time you'll have to spend in the kitchen. So there's a lot of research that goes into these recipes before I start cooking them and figuring out how to make them. So I'll, you know, if you're cracking a recipe from a restaurant chain, you can talk to the servers.
Yep.
Sometimes get a seat close to the kitchen, peek in there, see what's going on. Mm. Do research on the internet. I do a lot of that now, looking into the sort of the history of the company and the origins in the company, and that will give you some really good information about the product. And only then do I start doing the actual cooking. I'll write up a recipe and then start working on it. And at that point, it's like kind of like whittling. You take stuff out, you put stuff in, and that's where the real work happens.
Now that's interesting, because that you must be quite a good cook. I mean, I love cooking, and I would like to think that I have good taste buds. And in order to do what you're doing, you must have very good taste buds, because a lot of people will taste something and don't really have any clue whatsoever what the actual ingredients are.
I'm not sure if it's good taste buds or just knowing what it is you're looking for. Mm. So just, you know, over the years, I've learned how things are made, different things are made, how a muffin's made, how fried chicken is made, how chili is made, and the basics of how these things are made and what usually or typically goes into them. So when I'm tasting it, I'm going through a checklist in my mind. Do I taste garlic? Do I taste dairy? Do I taste, you know, certain spices, herbs? You know, so it's knowing how things are made, knowing what you're looking for, and then doing it.
And I guess some are easier than others. For example, let's take something that's very famous over here, and I guess you use it in the States too, tomato ketchup. Now, Heinz tomato ketchup is a very closely guarded secret, and many people have tried to copy that, and it never tastes the same. And that's quite a complex mix of stuff.
Well, yeah, Heinz ketchup. You do have Heinz there, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but for something like that, you get good information. Any packaged product is going to give you some great information right there on the label. Mm. You have an ingredients list. By law, you have to have an ingredients list, and it has to be in order of the most the most used ingredient in the product to the least used as far as volume goes. So for ketchup, you'll see it says right on the bottle tomato puree or tomato paste, and then corn syrup and vinegar and some other things like salt and onion, garlic powder. And then you'll take that list, make a recipe from it, and then start cooking. You just cook it on your stove. As far as ketchup goes, it's something you cook on the stove, you cool it, you taste it, and you compare it to the real thing, and then make your adjustments. So something like that is really not that hard.
Wow. Now, what about something where not only is the recipe closely guarded, it's a very difficult call to work out what's going on. Let's say Kentucky Fried Chicken. Now, unless you happen to have befriended Colonel Sanders years ago, I guess you'd be in trouble working that one out.
I actually saw Colonel Sanders walking through the airport when I was a kid.
No way.
Yeah. All alone in the Orange County Airport in California, I saw Colonel Sanders. I'll never forget it. I was maybe 8 or 9.
And did he look like he looks on all the packaging?
Yeah, and who would know that later in life I would be hacking his recipes? That's probably one of the most secret recipes. A lot of companies really bank on their secret recipes. Yeah. I was actually at KFC headquarters in Louisville, Kentucky, when I shot the first episode of my TV show.
Wow.
And went to the vault. They brought me to the vault. There is a vault there at headquarters. A guy has to come in. Everyone's got to leave the room while he types in the code. And this giant door opens, and inside the vault is another safe. A safe inside a safe, which they would not open. And inside that safe, supposedly, so they say, and who knows if it's hype, is the actual handwritten recipe from Colonel Harlan Sanders and vials of every one of the 11 herbs and spices used in the chicken. I really wish I could have seen that.
How amazing. And have you reverse engineered that to any great satisfaction, that particular recipe?
Yes, that's one I have been going back to over the years to improve. And when I did that show a few years back, we actually, we were there at KFC headquarters and talked to one of Colonel Harlan Sanders' friends, the guy who provided the fryers, the pressure fryers to cook the chicken. And he slipped up a little bit when I was asking him if he knew the recipe, and he actually had seen the recipe written down on a piece of paper. He said he actually told us on camera one of the ingredients, and I don't think he knew he was being recorded. So we got some good information there, stuff I didn't know before, and it was about the pepper. It's a special kind of pepper, telecherry pepper, one of the best black peppers out there. That, he says, is one of the secrets to the aftertaste of KFC chicken. So I got to make an even better version of that recipe for my last cookbook called Step by Step, and it's in there.
How wonderful. Now, you mentioned at the start there a McDonald's Big Mac. Who really wants to replicate a Big Mac? Come on, Todd.
You know what's so fun about this stuff? You may not be making Big Macs all the time in your house, but it sure is fun to try it and see if it works at least once. And that's a lot of why people do this stuff. They want to see if it works, and they want to give it to somebody and have them go, wait, what? You made this right here in your kitchen? Are you kidding me? It's just fun.
Is all the stuff you do America-centric, or have you tried to crack stuff from the other side, the other side of the world, or maybe Europe or Southeast Asia or whatever? Do you mainly stick to American products?
I do. I mainly stick to American products because that's what I have access to. And I've got to have the original product to hack it. I've got to have it right there. I'm certainly not ruling out doing stuff from other countries. If I were to crack something from your neck of the woods, what would be one of the top items, do you think?
Here's a real test for you, and I've interviewed one of the few people in the world that know the recipe for this, but it's a very popular ingredient in most people's cooking, and it's Lee and Perrin's Worcestershire sauce.
Oh, God, we have that.
Right. Sure. Well, that was obviously developed in Worcestershire in the UK.
Right.
And a very closely guarded secret. And I did watch a program on how it was made once, and there's a lot of stuff in there, Todd.
Yeah, and isn't it is it aged? Also, it takes time, right?
Exactly right. It's got all kinds of weird umami flavors in it that are kind of anchovy and fish sauce and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And you've really got to know. It's a bit of chemistry, I think, involved in that one.
Yeah, there is, and it's an aging process. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but that one takes patience. Kind of like Tabasco sauce, which you might be familiar with as well.
Absolutely.
That's also aged. These things take a long time. Maybe I don't have the patience. I don't know. Someday.
And what about when you're at home? I mean, are you actually a good cook or not?
I love cooking. I don't consider myself a chef. I've not really had any formal training. I've never worked in a restaurant, so I don't tag myself as a chef. I call myself a food hacker. I'm not a gourmet chef by any means. I'm just a guy who likes to figure out these puzzles and mysteries.
And I guess that would help you when you were cooking. When you sound like you cook like I do, I will vaguely look at a recipe, but I really am not the kind of cook who would say half a spoon of this and 0.3 milliliters of this. I think that's ridiculous when you're cooking. You should just taste it.
Yeah, exactly. You should just taste it and maybe have a glass of wine there while you're doing it and make it fun and make it loose and turn on some music and, you know, just have a good time.
Is there anything that you've done in your travels and your research that you've attempted and failed miserably, that you've got nowhere near the taste to your satisfaction?
There are, let me think. There's, I've tried to, we've got a popular canned chili here called Hormel chili.
Oh.
And I don't know, Hormel's going to hate me for saying this, but I started to try to hack this. I think it's the most popular canned chili here. And then I realized it tasted a lot like dog food. And why am I hacking this? Why am I hacking such a horrible chili? And when I hack something, I want it to be good, not just popular. So I abandoned that one.
Very funny.
People have requested that I clone real dog food like Alpo or some of these popular brands or Milk Bones here. And I'm not sure they realize that I have to eat the dog food to clone the dog food. And I'm really not ready to do that.
Absolutely. I don't blame you. Loads of books in. Is this something you're going to carry on doing for the rest of your life? I mean, you know, the books are endless. Top secret recipes, more top secret recipes, top secret restaurant recipes, low fat top secret recipes. You could be at this for the rest of your life, couldn't you?
You know, I'm doing something new now. It's a blog called The Food Hacker, thefoodhacker.com.
Yep.
Check this out.
I have indeed had a look at it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good. Yeah. So I think that's the new direction things are going. And I think this is my life, Bill. I think this is what I'll be doing for the rest of my life. I hope so, because I really do love it.
Does it spoil you when you go out to a restaurant, let's say, to a posh restaurant, and rather than just enjoying the food, I mean, I'm a musician by trade, and when I listen to a record, I analyze what went into that record, and it kind of spoils your enjoyment because it becomes an analytical process. Is it like that with eating with you?
Does it with music?
For me it does. Yeah, for me it does, because I produce records. So I say, how did they get that hi-hat sound? How did they get that vocal sound? Rather than just listening to the whole thing in a wanna.
Because because you know so much about music, it makes you appreciate it more, and you know more about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how I look at food. I it doesn't ruin it for me. I sit there and analyze it, and then I appreciate the work that's gone into it, and I seem to enjoy it even more.
Yeah, that's interesting. It gives you a different appreciation of it, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, I look at it a different way, but it doesn't ruin the experience.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I think it's a wonderful thing that you do. You've got one of the best jobs in the world, as far as I can see. Tell people again where they can find your blog, Todd.
Thefoodhacker.com.
Thefoodhacker.com. Go along there and you'll see all this stuff. It's just amazing to look at. You'll be there for hours. I was. Todd, it's been brilliant to talk to you, sir. What are you cooking for dinner tonight, then?
I am working on a new sauce it's not a new sauce, actually. It's from McDonald's. It's a Szechuan sauce. This is really cool because the sauce came out in 1998 when Disney was promoting their movie Mulan. It came out briefly. It went away. Then we have a cartoon show here that made it popular again, and McDonald's came out with a small run of it a year ago, something like that, and there were riots here. Believe it or not, you can look this up online. The Szechuan sauce from McDonald's, it caused riots. They came out with such a small amount and didn't have enough, and now they've come out with just recently, I think they've distributed 20 million packets of the stuff so that they don't run out anymore. It's called Szechuan sauce. It's like a the McNuggets at McDonald's, dipping sauce. I am tackling that.
Sounds like a tricky one. That could be tricky given that it would be Asian ingredients.
Asian ingredients, and it's interesting because you really get into the history of Szechuan sauce. What makes a Szechuan sauce a Szechuan sauce? There is a secret ingredient, the Szechuan peppercorns, and that's like the secret, and that's where it all starts.
Wonderful. What a great job. I'll say it again. Todd Wilbur, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Really enjoyed it.
You too, Bill. Thanks.